Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Maybe I just don't know how to read the room because this seemed like pretty intense. So
whatever you think is happening, the opposite is happening. That's what I've heard about the Halle.
Okay. Yeah.
We're fucking dead.
Yeah. Jonathan is not going to rejoin the party.
So there is a disaster in that as well.
Seems right.
There are two bodies on the ground. There are people surrounding you. They are wearing kind of like high-waisted skirts that are dyed with blues, reds, and browns. There are really fascinating geometric patterns on them. I think folks have like some piercings. I feel like the hairstyles are interesting. It is definitely like a cultural hairstyle that is diverged heavily from like whatever red feather standard would be, or, you know, even the standard, I think, of other like cultures that have municipalities within the rediscovered world. So these are folks who just look very different altogether, like clearly part of the same culture. They are surrounding you. Someone who is dressed like them is one of the dead bodies on the ground. The other, you know, bears the heavy wrappings of a sereno. Wears the heavy clothing of a sereno. It is something of a combination of like the protective gear that kind of everybody around town wears in most places that covers their full face, covers their hands, covers their legs. But this is decorated in like slain church imagery. It looks more spare. It looks more intimidating. This person is bleeding through it. They've got big cut marks in them. Both of them do. And you are surrounded by people in these tall grasses, and they have blowguns pointed at you. And, Jonnet, these folks are shouting to you in an unfamiliar language. The first question that I have for you, Tyler, is what does Jonnet do in that situation?
Fuck it, let's go. He goes like, we are not a threat. And can you as Bayless... I don't know if this is a role or anything, but like, can you tell me if those words are received or...
Love that.
And I think that's the last we hear of the monologue where it's like, he got it or he didn't get it.
Jonnet, I think you need to roll your presence. And Bayless, let's say, I think this is two low stakes dice. All right, so what are your presence dice?
My presence, I've got two
d8s. Yes. Okay, are you doing anything to that roll, or are you kind of making it as is?
I will just make it as is.
Perfect. That is two successes. Yeah, I want to know, how do you communicate to Bayless in this tense situation in a way that like makes him know that he needs to listen to you right now?
I think that there's like, I think that there's like a level of like wide eye Jonnet when he is like meeting someone and like, I don't know. I think it's just like a level of like short sternness that cuts through when shit gets heavy that is definitely at play right now. And it's really just like, you can, if you can't read from my inflection, like things are different now. Mm. Focus up. Like, we are not a threat.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not a threat.
A thing that I would like to layer onto your performance. And also, everybody, welcome Drew Merzhieski.
Hello, everyone.
Who's jumping in and playing Bayless for us. You are, Drew?
Yes.
Angry.
I am. Okay.
At these and like, oh, you, right. Yeah. You know, you're you could have every, you know, reason to be suspicious that maybe it's the Holly people who have something to do with Ariel's disappearance.
Okay.
So, yeah, you know, you're listening to Jonnet, but.
Yeah, there's a moment where Bayless is turning. He's like, we're not a threat to any of you, as he's looking around, definitely looking for a weapon. Like definitely like looking at the ground, looking around, looking for exits, looking for something to pick up and fight with. So I think it's easy to get out of his inflection that he's like, yeah, we're not a threat, but he is.
Yeah.
Bayless, I would like to roll from you.
Yes.
This is to be to know something about the Hale people. What is your base die roll there?
My actions are a D8.
D8, okay. You can spend to juice anything or just roll as is.
I'm just going to roll as is for this first one.
Hey, that's one success.
Hey, what do I know?
You see that they have blowguns pointed at you.
Oh, shit.
There are rumors about this. Mm-hmm. It's twofold thing. It's, I think, an exchange between, like, an actual violent exchange between the Hale and folks in this camp has not really happened in a long time. That isn't Red Feathers firing guns and Hale running away. The rumor is that their weapons are nasty. But I think with the success of the role, you do know they don't kill people. Like the weapon is a blowgun. It's poisoned, but most people have survived encounters.
Okay. Yeah, I think Bayless has had friends who, like, at some point or other have been, like, hit in some way. Like, they were,
I think you have people who know people. That's how far removed we are from.
Yeah, like, Bayless has friends who know people, who also know people, who know that person, whose brother whose boss.
But it was nasty.
It was nasty. It was so bad. Yeah. They didn't die, but, like, you know,
They were different.
They were different. They were not the same person afterwards. So definitely Bayless has trepidation. He's standing there, but is, like, he's willing to go for it if these people have hurt Ariel.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I think, like, fueled with that, we come back to the initial problem in question. Jonnet, you have reason to believe that Bayless is, like, heeded your instructions for now, but you are still in the situation of you don't speak this language.
Yeah.
And, tensions are clearly high. You are trying to indicate that you are not a threat physically, but these folks are still shouting. And based on the inflection, like, it could be shouting questions. What do you do?
I think Jonnet is going to attempt to signal to these people that he is not a threat. And he's going to do it in a way that I think, if I'm remembering correctly, he's seen the captain do. I feel like there was, like, several moments where, like, the captain bares his chest as a way of, like, showing that he is.
That is a tradition, and you would know this because you met with Sifa. That's a tradition linked to Sifa's people, which probably is not universal.
Right, and I guess my thought is, like, if Jonnet is a little bit of a fish out of water right now. And like, I think left to his own devices, he doesn't know how to communicate that he is not a threat. So he is going to his, he goes to is like, how have I seen other people communicate that they are not a threat since I've been out in the world? This is probably not going to translate, but I know that this, it's a bit of a gamble, but it's like I've seen
what else
this
can we do at this point? Yeah,
yeah. I've seen this mean something in some corners of the world. We'll see if it means something here.
This is a bedeviling presence check.
Absolutely.
So, you are up against three dice.
And you know, I mean, I'm this was the first skill that I've made in presence. I'm going to invoke he's new here. And it's if you have above four presence, people can forgive ignorance or mistakes.
Interesting. Okay. Let's roll it out. All right. So that is a wash with two complications. The boat comes up as our luminary.
Ooh.
And I think that is going to work pretty well in your favor. Yeah. Opportunity, freedom, and labor. Fortune awaits those who seek it, but only with blood and sweat. So I think you like bare your chest. Do you say anything with that?
I think it is. It is like a hands in the air. We are not a threat. Kind of taking in everyone who's around. And then Jonnet just kind of like, peace. And then like shows his, bares his chest, opens his hands. And we're looking for a friend. We didn't do, and like he kind of like gestures down to the bodies and like kind of like gestures to them. And again, puts his hands in the air, kind of like, I don't know how this happened. I don't know how this got here. We're not a part of this. We're just looking for our friend.
What I think happens, because we have two complications here.
Absolutely. This is messy.
You have bared your chest. And what detail that did we get recently? Well, Jonnet, it's that you got tattoos. You got tattoos of a like wind design.
Yeah.
And we got them from a metaphysician. And that's like, what are metaphysicians? It's us trying to exotify Western culture, which I think is fun and funny. And tattoos, like tattoo shops, have a long history of like culturally appropriative tattoos where you're taking symbols from cultures that you don't know what, and putting them up in your shop because they look cool. I think that wind design popular because it was on some like clothing and whatnot from Halle.
Yeah.
I think that mark of the wind, like keeping aware that like in Sphere, generally speaking, the wind is a positive thing. What does it mean in Halle culture that like is going to maybe not make the situation worse, but make it more complicated? Because you're indicating something. Like you show that, and it changes their attitude.
Is it a change their attitude for the positive or the negative, or we'll find out after I describe it?
I think what's going to happen is they are not, like, they're on the edge of shooting right now because everything's so tense. Nobody knows what's going on. You have made a clearly placating gesture of like, hey, we don't want any trouble. And you show off this symbol. I think probably the result of this is the Halle are going to want to take you to a second location to have a longer conversation. And what you're indicating to them by showing this tattoo has influence them to do that instead of shoot you with these blowguns.
Bet. I think that maybe the wind tattoo, as it made its way to the tattoo bar to be on display for John to be like that, mm-hmm. it's like three like gusts of wind illustrated, one above like the collarbone, one like right on the collarbone, and then one below the collarbone.
I like this. This makes a lot of sense because this is like a very high grassland area. And I feel like the wind would be depicted the way it moves over grass. So like it's an abstract shape, but like you can see that influence in it.
Yeah. And I think like the it is kind of like depicting a serene like scene in just like in this area, where it's just like the wind passing through and over this grass, and it's very peaceful. And I think it is come to be known as like a sign of like peace or parlay. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe
I think it is a symbol that is associated with people in Hale culture who make trades, and that's the reason that it made its way into Red Feather areas,
that
as like somebody who like trades goods is also kind of a diplomat and negotiator, so they're like they exchange looks. I think
there's this folks who are normally seen in Hale culture with these tattoos are like they go with the breeze, and with them they bring like wares and their tradespeople, and so that's kind of like the mark where it's like, all right, I'm blowing through town, I've got some good shit, like let's talk. And I think in showing that, Jonnet has unknowingly signals like, I've got wares, I'm down to trade, let's talk.
Yeah. I think it is a let's talk is like the primary read that they'd be getting from it. Like they exchange looks, and there's like a nervousness. You get something that's like another question that you can't answer. There's some chatter between them, and
I think the question gets posed. Jonnet doesn't really respond, doesn't know how to respond, and then there's like discussion within their ranks. Jonnet, as this is happening, kind of leans over to Bayless, and I'm like, and he's like,
do you know what they're saying? Whatever we do, make sure they don't take us to a secondary location.
Okay.
If they take us to a secondary location, they will butcher us.
Okay. I will not let that happen.
Good. Okay.
Okay.
We have to make sure that we stay here.
Got it.
We are in control.
Great. I love this. So a person who appears to be in a position of authority, like, and have a cooler head than everybody else, like indicates that most of the people who are holding blowguns put them down.
Okay. This guy's not important. Like this guy's just like a lesser subsidiary. I've heard all the rumors about the Hale. This guy's just not that important.
Jonnet suddenly starts to give Bayless a side eye. Like, wait, where are you getting your information from, man?
This is great. I kind of think that, this will be a situation where Jonnet has a relationship die with Bayless and is currently working against you in this scene. So we'll just factor that into our roles, which rules. Jonnet, I want a intellect check from you to see if you can actually figure out this situation to great. Like understand what is the role of this person here, what's going on, and like just to see if you can intuit through people's expressions and whatnot what is happening.
I mean, it feels like this person is the reason we are not blow darted currently, so it's like, all right, we need to appeal to this person.
Are you going to be modifying that role at all, or?
Yes, I will. What are the increments that I can add to? Because I,
so it would take two points to spend, or two bits to add a new die, add a d6, and one to upgrade something that's there.
I will do. I will add 2 points. I will use 2 points to add.
Okay. Yes. So you're rolling with 4 dice right now. That is a ton. Okay. That the dice were heavily in your favor, but did not actually turn up for you. We have...
This is going to be fine. This will be great.
Yeah, and part of that failure is due to Bayless.
Yeah. And it's like, I think Jonnet, where he was like, where is this guy getting his information from? Maybe kind of like leans in. Is like, he's taking leads. Like, he must know what he's talking about.
He must
about.
Know something. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm from here. Yeah. I know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
This
okay.
guy's not important. We need to talk to somebody other than this guy.
So then Jonnet looks around and like he looks for the person with like the longest blow dart.
Yeah, him. He's got the longest blow dart. He's the one in charge.
Oh no.
Okay. Actually, I think this is even much worse. I need to double check something.
They're just gonna let us go. Like that's what's gonna happen here.
So there is a disaster in that as well.
Seems right.
I think based on that, what do you do, Jonnet, that ends up with you and Bayless getting shot with a dart?
I think it is like Jonnet had the initial response to be like, all right, let's like open ourselves up. Let's not move. Let's be like, we are small. We are not bystanders, but like, we mean you no harm. And I think at this new information, it's just an overwhelming new amount of information, and Bayless seems to have some kind of North Star guidance where it's like, whatever you think, the opposite is. And so John is like, all right, I'm going to be friendly. We're going to turn on the charm. And so Jonnet turns to the person with like the longest dart gun, blow dart, and like starts to advance on this person and like, big arms, like, I'm your friend. Like, hey, we're looking for our friend. And at this point, he's just like throwing words out. And it's like, where are your friends? Like, he and I, we're looking for somebody. And I'm so happy that we found you. Can you help us? We're looking for our friend, Ari.
You had this person kind of de-escalating the situation, right? And instead of that, like, you do something that makes it so that they feel like they suddenly have to defend themselves.
Oh,
so
I think Bayless goes in for a hug. Like, I think Bayless is like, we're great here, and goes in for like a hug. And even though John is like trying to talk, him moving forward indicates like, this is a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
And they fire.
Yeah, they fire. The effect of getting hit with one of these darts is you both now have an injury that manifests as a negative relationship. Basically, these darts are made with a chemical that is distilled from the same fungus that they harvest to make the dye.
Oh, yeah.
That is, in fact, related to the crimson. And what it is, it basically creates a heavily localized crimson effect. This is not how people get crimson. People mm-hmm. have gotten crimson other ways through the process of refining the dye. It is a temporary thing that makes the nerve information that you receive in that area like 100 times more intense than it would normally be, to the point where a tiny pin of a dart in your skin is basically more pain than you can manage. So like, you get hit with these, it burns incredibly. It is like the pain descriptions of being stung by like the worst venomous but not like lethal insect that you can possibly be bit by. It's like a bullet ant gets you.
Gosh.
And you go down.
there's like yeah. I'm Johnny Kess. Whoa! And then it like buckles immediately. Ah! Oh! Ah! Ah! Kessler!
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll.
I hope everybody's enjoying the episode this week. I want to give a special thank you to Drew Merzieski for joining Tyler and I on this adventure. Speaking of Drew and Tyler, we have a very special presentation in the Dear Uhuru slot starting this week. It's going to be rolling out over the next several weeks of shows. Drew, Tyler, and I recorded it together and had so much fun with it, and I think everybody's going to love it. I don't want to give anything away, but I hope it gets people excited for the upcoming season of Skyjack's Courier's Call, which should be hitting the airwaves relatively soon. Here is, if you've got a moment, I would like to ask for your help. I have a new book out, The Ultimate RPG Game Master's Guide, that's full of advice, theories, and tools that I've come up with based on my experience as a game master to help people who are getting into it or looking to hone their craft. I'm hoping to get to 25 reviews on Amazon for this book by the end of May, and I could use your help to do that. If you've got a copy of the book, you can head to bit.ly/gamemasterRPG and leave a rating and review. You don't need to have purchased the book on Amazon in order to review it, and it helps me out a ton. For those that don't know, the money that I make from publishing these books allows me to make shows like this. If I had a day job at this point, it would be very, very difficult for me to keep Skyjack's going, but because I can support myself it allows me the time that I need to produce shows like this. And getting reviews on those books helps keep them at the top of the algorithm, which helps me stay in house and home. So once again, head to bit.ly/gamemasterRPG and leave a review for my latest book. Thanks so much, heroes. And while I'm thanking people, I have to thank our backers on Patreon. If you like what you hear here and you want to hear more, please head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. All of that money goes to fund productions here on the network, including Campaign Skyjack's. And it comes with neat audio bonus rewards, including bonus series for Skyjack's and every single episode of Campaign Starwall, which uses the same system. Once again, head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to support us. Now, a quick word from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. So basically, what an injury means is on any roll where it's relevant, you're going to have a relationship die against you in the pool. There are very few circumstances where an injury, especially an injury like residual pain from getting shot like a dart with a dart like this, would work in your favor. I guess if you were trying to convince somebody that you were in very bad pain through a social roll, it would aid you in that. Yeah. But for all other circumstances, it's probably going to be working against you. And it will be there until something is done to clear it up. Either somebody, you know, performing some kind of medical check on you or casting a spell of some kind. Like, there are ways to clear up injuries. But for right now, this injury is with you. From there, we cut to, I think, you waking up in an unfamiliar place. How are you restrained?
I think it's... We're talking grasslands, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's woven like grass bands that have been treated to be like super strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of think like it is clearly adapted from some other purpose. They don't have like cuffs normally. So yeah.
No. Do you know Chinese finger traps?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a Chinese finger trap. That
your whole arm
yeah. is yeah. in the Chinese finger
Oh,
trap.
That's kind of cool. That's really, really cool. And I know that there are some reeds like where you're running your fingers over them and it feels like they catch
yeah.
if you move across them in a certain way. So it's that like when you try to pull it out, it's the design of the trap. But when you push in to like try and loosen it, it's the side of the reed that catches. So there's like no real way out unless another person pushes it together for you so that you can
yeah.
get out of it. I think like you are surrounded and like it's hazy. Your arm where you were shot, your shoulder where you shot, really, really hurts. You can like look over and see the injury is not that bad. There's like a little bit of rosiness about it.
Can the dart still be in there?
I guess if you really want it to be in there?
I feel like that's a
that will keep us incapacitated.
Oh, okay, yeah. If it's worse if the dart is still in there. I actually really like that. That's great. Yeah, the dart is still in there. It is not as intensely bad as it was, but it's still pretty rough. And like as you try to like move your shoulders or whatever to maybe get out of like whatever these restraints are, you can feel in moving your shoulder. It stings.
Yeah.
It sucks so bad.
So are we in a new location?
You were in a second location.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. We're in a secondary location.
Is Bayless up?
Yeah. That Bayless is up, and it's a situation where I think like perhaps people were waiting for you to wake up. They're not ready to talk to you right now. So you and Bayless have like a minute for an exchange of some kind.
Are we in like a building? Are we in like a cave? Are we in like a,
I think it's like open air. Okay. You can see there are, essentially like tents thrown up. I think this is a culture that likes to stay pretty mobile or is mobile now for whatever reason. Grass is a pretty readily available tool in the area. So it's easy to set up and tear down. So it's like these cool grass tents that are around everywhere.
There is a immediately Jonnet is trying to like, does the squirming. There's nothing that can like really be done. He looks at the dart still in his shoulder, and I think he tries to like bite at it and try and like, but he can't really, I feel like he couldn't really like get to it. And so he's going to turn to Bayless and is like, first off,
You fucked up.
Why did you hug?
That was he put his
arms. Who told you that was the right thing to do?
My cousin. He told me that.
Who told him?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Next time you ask these things.
Okay, but he went for a hug. I went for a hug. I thought that.
I don't think he was going for a hug.
You didn't think he was going for a hug?
I don't think he was going for a hug.
Do you think? And he like tries to move his arms. Like, God damn it.
And as you're moving your arms, where was Bayless hit?
Oh. He was hit in the neck.
Yeah.
So like he moves his head. He's like, oh shit. Oh my God. Is it bad? Like how does it look?
It looks like a cherry tomato.
Oh, God. Oh fuck, it's crimson. Oh fuck, it's crimson.
Oh fuck. Yeah. it's like two people panicking, but also whisper panicking.
Oh fuck, stay calm.
Stay calm.
I think someone approaches you.
Yeah. And then they both like cinch it up.
This is a big dude. again, dressed up. He is holding a blowgun. Jonnet, I want another intellect check from you. This is actually intellect or presence, whichever you would prefer, to kind of read this person's like demeanor and intentions.
I'm going to just do a regular intellect roll.
I think preserving your resources a little bit might be a good idea. Okay. All right. So we have three successes for you. So you knocked this out of the park. There were a lot of like complications and whatnot that got canceled out, which is good. Your relationship with your injury, which I think is like clouding your mind, the pain that you have to cut through in order to stay present enough to notice things. There's an entangle from that, which I think in this situation, it just like, it brings the injury to bear on the situation, I think it starts throbbing again.
Yeah.
It's not to the point where it's like gonna make you pass out again, but now instead of it just being a thing, like now this is going to be present in almost every roll that you make, because whatever poison this is using is just in its cycle where it's really, really noticeable for you. But you got three successes. So you wildly succeeded in this. And that is going to express itself as you look at this guy. This is a big guy. You know that you are restrained. You feel this dart and the way it makes moving around difficult. So you know this person has every reason to believe, especially because they're familiar with what this dart does and you are not, that they should feel like they are completely in charge of the situation. You are at this person's mercy, but he looks so nervous. The way that he is holding this blowgun is like he is afraid of you. And you know, perhaps afraid of Bayless as well. He says something to you in a tone, again, because you got all these successes, in a tone that is trying to portray like more confidence than you can read on his face and his expression and his behavior. Again, you don't understand it. He says it again. There's like a level more frustration in what he says. And then he gestures to you, essentially like, get up. What do you do?
Yeah, he gestures get up, and Jonnet is going to like look at him, kind of like narrow his eyes a little bit. He's reading him a little bit, and he's going to shake his head no. And he's going to look at the dart in his shoulder. I'm trying to like, he's like, I'm not going to get up until this dart is out of my shoulder.
That is a huge play, and I absolutely love it. What I am going to do, this is going to be a bedeviling check. You are up against three low stakes dice. I believe this is going to be a presence roll.
Okay.
What you've noticed, this guy is afraid, and you're like, maybe I could capitalize on that and minimize this problem that I'm dealing with right now, which I love.
Okay. Not
the big
yet.
Moves for big players. Feel like a deception to me.
Yeah, we'll just do a regular presence. I will spend two to add
a D6?
Yes.
Okay. We will roll it. Wow. Okay. This is so interesting. So one result is that your negative relationship intensified. So
fair.
The injury that you have is on the way to getting worse. It is not actually changing states right now, but that is, you've had one intensify so far. And I am going to mark that down here. We intensify the relationship, but you got two successes on this.
Okay.
I think the gesturing, the seriousness, and the confidence that you are able to portray, whether you mean it or not, like, this guy is, like, in a situation where he doesn't know what to do, makes a decision, leans down, grabs the dart, pulls it out of your shoulder, and a lot of the pain recedes. I think I am going to take the die, and we're going to lower the die size of it. It will still be a factor because of the entangle, but, like, without the dart in, I think the dart being there makes it worse. Like makes it worse. But he does that, and then he gestures and says the words that you don't understand again,
hey,
indicating
hey,
to
me
follow.
Me too, please.
in Jonnet and Bayless being out, is Jonnet's bandana still on?
Yes, it
okay.
is still
yeah,
on
yeah.
right now.
Good. All right. So Jonnet is going to sort of like, you know, gesture via elbow to Bayless in the similar way as like to try and essentially do the same as like, all right, now do him.
The guy looks at you again, still looking nervous, and he holds up one finger And then he gestures like this way.
John, it turns to Bayless. I did what I could do. I think.
God damn it.
I think you fucked up.
I did. No. Yeah.
Is John it doing this without Bayless?
Bayless is coming gesturing with? Okay. For Bayless to come with.
All right. Yeah, I think as it's happening, Jonnet kind of offers his other shoulder to Bayless as kind of like, hey, if you need someone to prop yourself up on, like prop yourself on my shoulder. I will help you. I can't fix you.
Bayless goes for it, like obviously, and leans against. I think it's just excruciating. So he's gonna move the entire time. So he's gritting his teeth. There's little screams that are like,
yeah. And I think as they're tailing this person, Jonnet is asking Bayless, like, okay, what do you know that you know about these folks?
Okay, it's honestly
only real answers only, not hearsay, not cousins.
They suck.
Okay,
that's all I know.
Okay,
like they just they're awful. They steal things from us. They try to like hurt people as they get out. Like these people are hostile and angry and like not.
But I mean, like that's just y'all. And it feels like y'all put them here, or they were put in this situation.
I didn't do that. No, right. Why are you mad at me then?
We're making a presence check. Bet. This is against Bayless for your radicalization. Because you've never had, so this is against two, D8, is Bayless's regular. Nobody has ever questioned really the circumstances that led to this situation before. Jonnet, are you going to do anything to like change this, role, affect this role?
I mean, yeah, I feel like it's no. I think it's just like a standard presence role. But he is being like, wait, you just believe that? Like, why you just believe that they're hostile? Carte blanche? Like, think about what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, rough. Okay. So what this is? This is two failures, two complications, two entangle. I think. I mean, Drew, you can decide what that means.
That's Bayless doubling down on which is, you know, hurts Drew, but like, as Bayless, like it's Jonnet starting to be like, try to logic through it.
Yeah.
And Bayless being like, there is no reason. There's no reason why my coworkers would lie to me about that.
My work friends
said we are like a family. Okay, like we are together in this, and it is so much them versus us.
Yeah,
yeesh.
Yeah. Poor guy.
You know who's making it rough for us? Not our upper management. It's these guys. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's the people more below me that are the problem.
Obviously, why would my manager? They're trying to look out for me, and give me a job, take down my debt.
I think Bayless believes that more than he did before that the Holly people are dangerous, which is fine. And you know that like that doesn't have to color Jonnet's perception of things anymore. But you know, anytime Tyler makes a comment that like offhandedly could question some assumptions that Bayless has about the working situation, we are going to make checks against his radicalization. We are moving through the camp. Like you're walking through supporting Bayless, and you can see like people around. There are a lot of people. It's not like there's a procession of people watching. There are people kind of going about their lives, but you can sort of see that everybody is like doing what for them would be everyday things, but in a distracted way because they are looking at the two strangers who are in town right now. And there's a general atmosphere of like fear and nervousness. the guy who is leading you, because again, you got a heavy read on him. That was three successes. You can tell that he is trying to walk in a way that conveys strength and surety. He is putting on a show for everybody who is now watching you that we have this situation under control. But you can tell that his grip on that blowgun is tight.
All right. They...
Yeah?
I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I don't think that they either think they can take us or want to take us.
Okay, so...
So let's just... Let's not stir the pot, okay?
Oh, I was going to suggest we just go for it.
No! No! My dude! If we go for it, we are so surrounded. We don't know. Do you know where we are right now? Is there any kind of, like, indication of, like, where are we? Can we see, Sorrow's End in the distance?
I'm glad that you brought this up, Jonnet. Scotty Jackson. My question to you two is, what port do you think this is? For me, I kind of think this is an unknown port city. What I imagine happens as Jonnet leaves home is that he hops on whatever ship just happens to be leaving because he's doing a little bit of a runaway. Like, he's stolen Zana's map. Everybody's surprised that he's gone. So he's just hopping on a ship, takes him to a close by city, and there he is, like, cooling his heels for a bit, or maybe he's traveled a little bit because he's got to get to a place where he's likely to run into the Uhuru somehow.
Bet. Yeah, timeline-wise, he is just kind of struck out. I would say that, like, he's probably still in the honeymoon phase of, like, I'm doing it. Like, mm-hmm. This is great.
The food is, you still have lots of food.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's like, I got a really cool piece of paper and it's got a lot of cool stuff about this guy, and he's riding that high. And so he's in the port of drought. He's probably gone as far as he can with just, like, the bits that he's had in his pocket. And this is kind of the first time where it's like, oh, I actually can't go any further unless I get more money. And I either have to sell, like, some of my stuff, or I need to, like, get a job. But I'm out and I'm doing it, and isn't life grand?
Yeah. So I kind of think then we find Jonnet as he is in a moment of, like, relaxation, but he is also planning his next move. So what is Jonnet, like, 15-year-old in a strange city doing to enjoy himself while he figures out what he's going to do?
Would it make sense if Jonnet's made his way to the coast? I feel like, ironically...
Yeah, why not?
Okay. Drought is, like, maybe it was named during a time of drought when there wasn't any, like, natural things that... dried up. Since then, by the grace of whoever, water has returned.
We see the city of drought. This is a place that had a red feather port built, like, a decade ago, because it used to be a very safe port. It was far inland. It was on the edge of what people consider to be the mainland. However, over the course of that decade, sea levels have been rising. The land has been swallowed up and water has been creeping in. Drought was named this way because it is just part of a very arid place that gets almost no rain. It is not quite a desert. There is a lot of underground water, but water from the coasts has been pushing in. And I think fresh water from the ground has been rising up. What used to be a very flat city, or a relatively flat city that was, you know, full of a good grid pattern, has recently hastily added curving streets and pathways because much of the city is flooded. Venice-style flooded, in that, not that we've built bridges and whatnot, but, like, the lower level of kind of most of the buildings is completely flooded out, but people are still living in the upper levels because that's what's around.
Mm-hmm.
There might be people who are using, like, rafts and whatnot to push themselves around in some places. It's a city that was not built to be this way, but it has adapted. And for now, there is still an active port. It's not as bustling as it used to be. Redfeather has shifted a lot of routes out of there, but there are still company ships that come through and privateer ships that come through because it is a good waypoint between major ports.
I think also you'd have to have people there to guard against the Mariner if the sea has come in that close.
I think perhaps like there are people like being pushed in, refugees probably being pushed in. It's not that people are guarding against the Mariner necessarily, because especially at this juncture in history, you are either protected by the Red Feathers or the Church.
Yeah.
Like the only way to fight the Mariner is to bomb them out from the skies.
Mm-hmm.
But because the coasts are disappearing, more and more people are driven here. So I take back what I said, it was partially bustling. This is a packed city that has like twice the population for what it should have.
And it makes sense that Janet would have been pushed there by some trade lines, whatever, has pushed Janet to drought.
Yeah. And, you know, that does mean there are a lot of trade ships that pass through simply because there are a lot of people that need supplies here. And while there is still money for them, and is also probably good recruiting territory, too, because people are like, I need a job. I might as well like sign up. So I think we see streets full of people lined up in front of stalls that are basically recruiting for the Red Feather Syndicate. There are also some privateer outfits and other sky-based businesses where the job that you're getting might not be on a ship. You might be getting a job at like a textile like factory or something like, you know, hundreds of miles away that is part of a privateer umbrella or whatnot. But like there are a lot of people around. There are a lot of ships kind of moving in and out of this place. The city is alive, I think, Jonet, in a way that Acheron is like so much more vibrant than Acheron.
Yeah. I feel like there is, Jonet is kind of fascinated by this raft profession that he did not know was a thing. And so I think he's been in drought for a few days. He didn't necessarily have a plan for when he was leaving, but he has stayed longer than he has like other ports. And a lot of it is just like he finds himself trailing these rafts and just kind of like watching the people being rafted about and the people like pushing the raft. And he's just kind of like romanticizing about it a little bit. He has tried to strike up conversation with the folks manning the rafts a couple times and gets some degree of like, hey, get out of here, kid, you bother me. But that has not decreased his like quick fascination with this line of work. And so I think that has him subconsciously exploring a lot of like channels in drought. And so he's kind of like through following these rafts, kind of getting like a tour of the city and like the nooks and crannies and the back channels that people might take in order to like, you know, transport folks. He, you know, following a cab.
And here is where we come to Jonet's essential problem. At his hip is his purse containing the bits that he has remaining. It's not that he is in danger of starvation or living without shelter, but the next ship that Jonet books a trip on, like whatever its cost is going to be, will likely leave him in a new place where he will be desperate for money.
Yeah.
So Jonet has been kind of kicking the can down the road of like, I can live here for a while, but this is probably not a good place to settle. And the next place I move to, I'm making a big bet. Silas Dennison, you are in this city. I will let you decide whether you are here with an Audrin or not. I do think it kind of makes sense.
It does make sense. And I think that Dennison is here with the Red Audrin. This is probably like a relatively newer stop on our like list. And in the sense that, like, you know, they haven't been coming here for 40, 50 years. Like, it's only been the last like 10 years that, like, going to drought has become a big part of, like, this particular area.
I think it's considered a temporary stop and has been a temporary stop for, like, the last 3 years.
Yeah.
It's like, there's so much need for this area that, yeah, yet again, drought needs more mail.
Need more mail and, you know, more supplies that we pick up as we go from place to place. We're like, we'll stop there, we'll unload and that sort of thing. It's definitely the day after we have landed, which is a rest day for the ship, which means that all the kids are either out doing things or they're asleep. The captain's council is off doing their own thing. And I think this is like a rare moment that Dennison has to be like not on board the ship, but to be like, I'm going to go out and like walk and see things, which is like rare, him being captain. So I think we do see him in drought, his cat Lysander on his shoulders. He's like in his early to mid 50s, and he's taking a rare moment to enjoy being in a city, because he usually doesn't get to do that.
Does Silas have anything on him that would mark like your affiliation with the Red Audrin?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He is wearing his, like, Red Audrin captain's coat.
Cool.
It is a different shade of red than the red feathers. It's more like an orangish red.
Bet.
And he definitely has, like, insignias of the courier service, like, on him, like, patches.
Cool.
That would be, like, you know, Swiftwell Courier, definitely.
Cool.
I mean, it's definitely happened in the time he's been walking around when people are like, here's a letter. And he's like, thank you, I'll take that. Yeah, it's fine.
So one of you notices the other. Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter @OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter @ArnieParrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Allie Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at Dreams to Become, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.